Hello and welcome to UK Carcast, the podcast by non-sport trading car collectors for non-sport trading car collectors. I'm your host Paul Bynes and this is episode 9, Details Are Sketchy. Hello and welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is the Sketch Special. Sketch cards have become increasingly popular over the last few years and I thought it was an opportune moment to record interviews with as many people as possible involved in the industry itself. As a result, I've got 3 lengthy interviews with artists involved in producing sketch cards at the moment. Dave Fox, Kate Bradley and Patrick Hamill. Harris Tozer, production manager of Non-Sport Update magazine, was recently at the New York Comic Con and he recorded some shorter interviews with a number of artists in attendance there. The episode also contains the usual lengthy chat with Harris Tozer and sketch collector David Brown. As you might have gathered from the fact that we've got so many interviews and other features, this is an incredibly lengthy episode. So long, in fact, that I've had to cut it in half. So there are 2 parts to this, episode 9A and episode 9B. Splitting it in half means that I can actually do some news this episode, so that's coming up. Inkworks have got a brand new internet exclusive promo offer. This one for their upcoming set Kung Fu Panda, a set based on the upcoming animated Jack Black film. More details are obviously available at the Inkworks website, that's inkworks.com or inkworkscards.com, and click on the free promo link. If you're in the US, you can send a stamped addressed envelope. If you're outside of the US, you need to send an international reply coupon and a self-addressed envelope, and you need to get those to Inkworks by June the 19th. Cards Inc., the British card manufacturer and distributor, best known probably for its Thunderbirds the Movie and the Prisoner sets, has changed hands. Now, according to a press release issued by Corgi International Limited, Cards Inc. Limited's trading card distribution division has been transferred to Esdevium Games Limited, the UK's largest games distributor. The purchase was completed on April the 9th, 2008, and includes the transfer of the Cards Inc. brand name and its trading card game, sticker and collectible trading card based business. Another UK car company, Strictly Inc., have announced the impending release of their Hammer Horror set. It's available for pre-order at the Strictly Inc. website, which is strictlyinc.com, and includes autographs and sketch cards. The set is the first of an intended series of premium trading card collections, and autographs submitted for the set include such Hammer luminaries as Caroline Munro, Jenny Hanley, David Prowse, Martine Beswick, Veronica Carlson and more. There's also a limited edition collector's binder which contains a unique hand-signed autograph card of Ingrid Pitt. More information, as I said, from strictlyinc.com. And now, on with the interviews. In this first half, we have our usual chat with Harris Tozer, production manager of Non-Sport Update magazine, and also with sketch collector and new Non-Sport Update card talk moderator, David Brown. Well, it's that time of the podcast again when regular listeners can go off and make themselves a cup of tea or coffee or go and attend to some household chores for a few minutes. And regular Harris fans, hello, Eric. We'll want to listen in for the next few minutes to hear the dulcet tones of Harris Tozer, the production manager of Non-Sport Update magazine, and our regular...
Even my mother doesn't listen to this.
Hi, Harris. Your mother doesn't listen to this. That doesn't bode well.
She's not one of the Harris fans either.
How are you getting on, all right?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Also with us today, just as an experiment to see if anybody wants to listen to him, we've got David Brown, members of Non-Sport Update's Card Talk message board. We'll know him as CSI Dave. And a bit of a news item, David is now one of the moderators on Card Talk. So welcome to your first appearance on Cardcast, David.
Thanks, Paul, and nice to be here. Makes a change from Harris, I suppose. Hi, Harris.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Dave is one of the 3 musketeers. I'm the second one, and one of the guys I'll be talking to later on in this podcast, Patrick Hamill, is the third. So this is possibly the only time you'll ever hear all 3 of the 3 musketeers on recorded in one place. So this is fun.
We do count Harris as the fourth one, obviously.
He's the one you leave behind, or you put him on a donkey and he trails behind, you know, so we don't pay much attention to him.
That's right. I'm the one who did.
That's the one.
There's a few subjects that obviously we can't talk about. We can't talk about the new series of Doctor Who that's just started over in the UK because Harris is a big fan and doesn't want any spoilers. Right. We can't say anything with adult content because this is a non-explicit podcast. So that was the end of the podcast, and thank you for talking to me, guys. No, seriously, as both of you know, because we have discussed this beforehand, this is a sketch card special episode. Sketches do seem to be on the up and up at the moment. I mean, I know they've been inserted into sets for the best part of a decade, if not longer. You might have more information on that, Harris. They've been going for quite a while, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
They do seem to be coming to prominence now. Most sets are coming with sketches.
I would say maybe now we're in the golden age of it. I mean, and we've been
Yeah,
so
but it does seem to be particularly
years.
Prolific. I mean, at one stage, sketches were really restricted to art-based sets, so comic book sets or DC or Marvel-type sets or animated films. Right. But now they're coming out for live action.
Right.
I mean, the classic ones for that are Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and, of course, the Indiana Jones sets. And there were sketches for Heroes as well, mm-hmm. weren't there?
There were. And another interesting thing would be to actually figure out who was the first company to do the sketch card. I guess there's some controversy there. I've heard from three different manufacturers in the last month, all claiming
there's been quite a bit of discussion on Card Talk about this very subject. Someone put out a press release from one particular company, and somebody said, well, hang on a second, what about XYZ cards?
Right, and no sooner did I hear that than I heard a third company mentioned to me, well, you remember when we were the first company to put in sketch cards without giving away anything? That one company has quite a twist coming up for sketch card fans. So they swore me to secrecy, but there is something, a new twist coming up here in the next few months for sketch card collectors.
Dave, I know you used to collect cards quite a lot, and you still do pick up the odd sketch card when you see one that's of interest to you. But most of your sketch collecting tends to be commissions, I think, isn't it?
They tend to be now, yeah. I used to do a lot of card collecting. That changed to sketches a couple of years ago. Now I'm more into the commissions. It's just so getting so difficult to get the really high-end ones. Well, it's not difficult. It just costs a lot of money. So for commissions, you're paying a reasonable amount and getting exactly what you want.
If you go for a commission, you can say, well, I'd like this, please, and it's for you, so you can ask them to do what you like.
That's right. I believe, I'm sure Harris has a bit more info, and even some of the artists later on. Some of them have to obviously pass the company's licensing, for the actual products, licensing the actual images and the people themselves, the images they're drawing. So
that's
it's
right.
quite tough, I think, to get through exactly what the artist probably would love to do.
Patrick mentioned in his interview, which is coming up later on, that as he understands it, for Lord of the Rings, artists were asked not to do Christopher Lee sketches because Christopher Lee had image approval and he approved in very, very few cards.
When they have their own image rights as well, I mean, you've got that extra layer again.
Yeah.
And I would have still thought that maybe DC and Marvel in this case, would protect the rights to a degree of the characters, maybe not to the extent of the actual live-action artists, but there must be some. And so I'm sure the artists coming up will be able to help a bit more with this, but I would have thought there'd be some restrictions to what they can do.
I'm wondering whether one of the restrictions might be quality control, because obviously a controversial subject that's been discussed not just on Card Talk, but on a number of other boards, and I'm not going to name artists here. There is in the collecting community a perception that some artists are maybe just dashing things off and producing sketches that, yes, they're technically sketches, but they're really little more than a couple of scribbles on a card. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't know. I do think that maybe in the case of what you're talking about, I mean, there's probably a flip side to that story that we're just not getting. I think, you know, it could be something like I heard somebody discuss this the other day, that maybe that artist that you're referring to was contacted at the last minute and said, hey, can you do, you know, 300 or 400 more sketches for us? And it was only given a few days, and that was the best he could do. Now, granted, maybe some artists would have turned that down, but, you know, who are we to say?
Part of the problem with the general perception of certain artists and their work is that there are so many sketches coming out, but this is the same sort of thing that's happened with autographs and costume cards. Once upon a time, you were lucky if you got one autograph a case, then it went down to one every couple of boxes, then it went to one a box, four a box,
And now if people get disappointed if they don't get a couple of good names in a box, plus a costume card, plus a sketch. And I suppose if companies are having to cater for that, they're having to try and get in more and more sketches, which means that either they go two ways. They get a lot of artists to do a few sketches, or they get a few artists to do 1,000 at a time. And I suppose that is going to impact the quality because they're pushed for time on these things. They usually have a fairly short lead time on these things, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thriving community of artists on Card Talk.
Yes, there are. There are. There's plenty of them, and as there are on some of the other forums, too. I don't want to say that we have a monopoly on them, certainly. If there's certainly.
I think the one that's come to prominence fairly recently is Scoundrel, which has a very high. That is pretty much entirely sketch related, isn't it? Whereas, of course, Card Talk is more general purpose.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's very art friendly and it goes beyond
which
cards.
Which is the sort of area, really, that you're concentrating on now, isn't it, Dave? Is going beyond, and you're going on to the larger format.
I have done. I've gone back to the cards, really, but I have done the odd larger format thing as well. It's just nice to have a bit of original artwork.
Are you still collecting sports cards, Dave?
Got a few, not so much anymore. I used to collect the ice hockey cards and some golf cards, being really boring, but
do they make sketch cards for them?
Not that I've ever seen, but I haven't had any ice hockey cards for a good few years, and
I do know there for a while John Zopp was working for one of the American football minor league type card companies that was a long stretch there. But anyway, yeah, he was doing some football cards, so I would imagine some of the other companies are doing sketch cards as well.
It's quite possible. We don't really get a lot of the sports cards over here too much, so we wouldn't really see the range. But
Dave, what sort of stuff do you look for when you are commissioning sketches?
I've gone down the route, which I think quite a few other people have done as well, with getting similar, if not the same, images done by the different artists to get the different styles come out. So you'll see most of mine are going towards the Firefly and Serenity line, has been Alias, that type of thing, but within those sort of couple of areas, and then just go around different artists getting the same characters drawn. Obviously there's not too many in Serenity to get done, so it limits the amount of cost I have to spend. But no, I mean, I actually like the whole broad range of things. I do like the comic-y ones. I do like the fun ones. But I also really like some of the real life.
Yeah, the more photorealistic, the more finely detailed sketches, shall we say?
Yes, rather than more.
Because you and I have had this discussion in the past about liking the sort of cards that, with only a few lines, you get across the image and it looks good. Whereas there are some where you just get a few lines and there's nothing there, or you get a lot of lines and it doesn't look anything like.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, some of them you got a couple of lines and it looks like a couple of lines, and some of them, from very little work, actually look really good.
How do you research what artists you're going to approach to do stuff for you?
A lot of them's actually from the board, seeing what people have got in their favourite sketches, what sketches are being pulled, what comes out in the sets, and what ones I like of those, what artists, and really then trying to contact them. You have to wait quite a while.
Plus, I suppose the problem is that you're having to deal with people across the Atlantic, so you're having to rely on delivery times and shipping companies and all that sort of stuff as well.
You come down to Royal Mail and you've got problems anyway, but you can bypass them a bit, but it is worth it when they finally turn up.
Harris, how are the artists received at the shows you go to? I mean, do they seem busy? Do they all get a lot of work, or does it seem to be the case that one or two will get a lot of people and then everybody else sitting there drinking coffee and twiddling their thumbs?
Well, I think they're all pretty busy. Of course, you know, you're going to have your fan favorite no matter what, so, I mean, Joe Jesko, for example, at the last show, although I don't know that he's necessarily sitting there doing sketches, but anyway, someone like him, you know, obviously is going to be more of a fan favorite and is going to get more of a crowd.
Well, when Martinet came over, he was swamped, wasn't he?
Right. Yeah, I remember him walking into the night.
Sorry, Dave,
For some of the fans.
It's actually quite sad that we don't get them, because I think that would draw a huge crowd in. And the ones that have come over, like Cynthia, get mobbed and they have too much to do.
If a show organiser gets in a bunch of artists and says, right, there you go, guys, they will get completely swarmed over and get tons of commissions. That certainly seems to be the experience from what I've seen. Well, Dave has to leave us now. Thanks for coming on to the show, Dave. Welcome to the Card Talk moderating team.
Well, thank you. I've had a good time. It's been fun. Can't wait to hear the end result.
Okay. Hopefully we'll have you on again in the near future.
If all my fans vote for me, then I could be back.
Right. Okay. We've just been talking to Dave Brown, who has to leave us, but Dave's one of the new moderators on NSU Card Talk, and he's a long-time collector and collector of sketches. So, once again, thanks a lot for coming on. So now it's back to all Harris all of the time.
Well, that's the way it should be.
Well, exactly. So, Harris, regular viewers of Card Talk, which is the message board on your website, of course, will be familiar, if they looked on there today, with the Open That Box Day. And it just so happens that the day we're recording this interview, which is the 12th going on 13th of April, is indeed Open That Box Day.
That's
Do you want
right.
to tell us a bit more about that?
Well, Open That Box Day is a promotion that we started started 3 years ago, and it is a day for collectors to basically what it says, open that box. They can open a new box, or perhaps they've got a box that they've stowed away for a rainy day or whatever. But for whatever reason, they should open it and share their experience with other collectors on a special area of the Card Talk website. And we always try to have them make it a little more meaningful by perhaps opening it with their family or with their friends or that type of thing, and maybe taking some pictures, posting them on the web so that other people can see what they're up to. And it's fun, you know, because everybody enjoys, of course, opening the box, but they also enjoy reading what everybody else is up to. And so it's kind of a communal thing, you know. It's fun.
I mean, this isn't sponsored by any of the card companies or anything. It's literally just an NSU initiative to try and get people to open boxes and make it a big fun day, really, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, it's a win-win for everybody because, you know, perhaps they might need a box, so they go to their favorite retailer and buy the box, which is good for the retailer, and it's fun for the collector. And, you know, as I said, it's a win-win for everyone.
Have you seen any interesting reports so far of what people have been finding?
Well, we've had about 40, approximately 40 responses so far, which is pretty good. And a lot of people, there seem to be a couple of things that people are opening a lot of, which would be the new Indiana Jones set that we've talked about a couple times, the Indiana Jones Heritage, and also that Women of Marvel box.
Those, yeah.
Like two of the most popular boxes that people have opened. And people are, you know, getting all kinds of sketches, which is cool. And one of the things that I always like is when a couple of people, they seem to open a little more obscure things. Somebody opened, I think, a box of Black Hole today, you know, which is an old Topps release from the 80s, I guess.
79, I think, wasn't it?
79, yeah. 79, okay. So it's always fun when you get an oddball item like that. And a couple of other things like that. Somebody was opening a hoard of packs that they had been saving. That was interesting. So it's definitely a fun read, and it will probably be there for a little while. So by the time this podcast comes out, while you still can't participate, you still could come on the forum and read the responses.
As you said, there's no reason why you have to buy the latest high-profile release. You can pick up a cheap box from your local dealer.
Yeah. Within a few weeks before the Open That Box Day, a lot of people will see if they can find a $5 or $10 box of something, you know, that might be 5 or 10 years old and some dealer's trying to get rid of, and they'll save that for Open That Box Day. So you get all kinds.
Yeah, it's a good way of broadening your interest and getting into a subject that you wouldn't ordinarily have picked up. A lot of people just buy sets or boxes based on a particular interest, whereas if they see a $5 or a £5 box somewhere, they think, oh, well, it's only $5, I'll give it a go. And if they happen to be on Open That Box Day, then they can share experiences. And they may even, as a result, find other people who actually collect those cards who might be interested in trading for some of the stuff.
Right.
So it has to be said, the earlier sets, they were base cards, and you may have had a couple of holo foils, and if you're really lucky, some gum. Though I really would strongly suggest if anybody has bought an old box like that for Open That Box Day and they've got sort of 36 packets of gum, don't touch the gum. Don't eat it. It's probably not...
That's right. Definitely not a good idea.
you start eating that one while you're opening the package, and you may well be hallucinating about some of the characters on the cards coming to life, so be careful.
That's right.
So, talking about shows, we come, of course, to Allentown, which is going to be about a week or so after this episode is due to appear online. Any last-minute additions or changes that you want to talk about, Harris?
Well, things always change up to the show, basically. There's still a chance that we might get one or two manufacturers to come that we haven't yet announced, who are still trying to work things out. So, although we've announced, I believe, 6 manufacturers coming, there still might be a 7th or possibly an 8th. So people should keep an eye on the not to keep pushing the website or whatever, but people should keep an eye on the website and the forum, because if we do find out any of these last minute changes or additions, we'll be posting them. But it would be cool if we do get another couple of manufacturers there.
Moving on from the show, as I say, we've discussed the show in previous episodes. Anybody that wants to go, that's the first weekend in May.
That's right, May 3rd and 4th.
Yeah, so, and there's full details on the website.
Right.
I know you've been particularly busy over the last couple of weeks. You've been obviously working on the next issue, which I'll talk to you about in a moment. But you've also been working on updates to the new PCE. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Promo Card Encyclopedia and Price Guide is something, as you said, that we've been working on. That is a publication that's been around just about 10 years now, and it's compiled by Todd Jordan, and it's something he has done about 7 editions of, something like that. We've just gotten involved with it with the last edition, which was in the end of 2004. So this is our second time out with it. And what it is it's a book basically all about promotional cards, of course, which are very popular in the hobby. And it has some 8,000 cards listed. It's very comprehensive. And it's 192 pages with many, many promo images. I think there's about 700 promo images featured in the book, and there are 2 gallery sections, one of which is Todd's humorous account of the last 10 years and how the Promo Card Encyclopedia has evolved over the time. And also, he updates his PCE Tomb of the Unknown gallery, which is a bunch of cards that are so obscure that he's not even quite sure what they are, and he's looking for readers to try and help determine where they came from.
This is really just concentrating on promos as opposed to the encyclopedia, which obviously came out last year, which is also edited by Todd Jordan. More of an overview of the whole gamut of cards over a set time period.
Right.
This one is promos.
Yeah, this one is just promos, whereas the Encyclopedia of Non-Sports went back to the mid-80s, and obviously it could have gone back, you know, to the late 1800s. This one begins with the birth of promos in the around 1990, so it's cards from 1990 through today.
I assume it's been radically updated since then, because there have been so many new sets since the last issue came out.
Right, yeah, the last one was about 3 years ago, so this has got, you know, 3 years worth of updates. Todd's basically completely overhauled it, so it's brand new for 2008.
Is it mainly US releases, or does it cover some of the foreign sets as well?
No, it does cover some of the foreign releases as well. Now, pretty much does stick to trading cards. So, whereas at one point Todd was including some things like postcards and all sorts of things like that, this does pretty much now stick to trading cards. But I believe he does cover some of the Cards Inc. releases and Strictly Inc. releases from the UK.
And when's that actually going to be available on the bookshelves?
We'll have it out right before the show in Allentown. So anybody who comes to the show in Allentown will be the first people to get their hands on the book, and then we'll start shipping it right after that. So it should ship the first full week there of May.
And obviously, if you can't get down to the Allentown show, I'm assuming that will be available on the Non-Sport Update store.
That's right. It's, in fact, it's already on there right now for pre-sale. $18.95 for the book plus shipping. So it's very thorough. If you're interested at all in promos, it's really a must-have.
Next issue. What have you got planned for that one?
One cool thing that we just found out this week is that we will have an Indiana Jones movie promo in the book, and not only a promo, but an exclusive promo. So we just found out this week that the promo will be exclusive to Non-Sport Update with the NSU logo on the back. So that's really cool. And we'll also have 2 promos in the book from Rittenhouse. We'll have a Batman Archives and a Battlestar Galactica Season 3 promo.
Rittenhouse are really diving into their comic book properties in a big way now, aren't they?
They sure are. You know, it's really something that they have both the DC and the Marvel license, and they're really gone gung-ho with both of them.
What sort of articles have you got in the latest issue then?
Well, of course, the cover story is Indiana Jones. So we'll have a cover story about the new Indiana Jones movie card set. And we have feature articles on the new Kung Fu Panda card set. We have one on the Journey to the Center of the Earth 3D set. We have an article about the new Heroes set. We have one for the vintage trading card fans on Star Cal decals, an old set of decals that were done, I guess, in the maybe 30s or 40s. Prior to stickers, they were, you actually had to, you know, moisten them and you could stick them on your school book or whatever. Yeah, and this particular release had some of the old classic movie stars on them.
What letter range are we up to on the price guide this issue?
Oh, that's a good question. We will have letters A through L in this issue. Yeah, we're going to be listing the sets from the last 5 years.
When is the next issue out, Harris?
That'll start shipping around May 9th.
Time to say thank you to Harris Tozer.
Yes, and I wish you well with this special sketch card episode of the podcast.
It's been fascinating talking to the artists. They're really giving me a good insight into what goes on behind the scenes of creating sketches. I think what's coming across, the artists are not just in it, as some people might think, that they get paid, so they have to do it. They don't have to do it. They're doing it because they like what they're doing. They love drawing. They like the subjects that they're drawing. They're keen to do the best that they can in the time available. And it's something they really enjoy. And I think as long as people, whenever they pull a sketch card out, they remember that they're getting something that's been drawn with care and with attention and with a certain amount of love of the subject, then they're getting an absolute bargain no matter what they paid for it.
That's right.
So remember that. Give an artist a hug next time you see one. They need our very best wishes. They do. They really do. So,
and buy a commission. They really don't make a whole lot of money on those sketch cards.
They don't. If an artist who does sketch cards has a website and does and takes commissions, I'd strongly recommend you go visit them. Support your local artist. You never know when they might not be there. Well, once again, Harris, thank you for coming on and talking to me, and obviously to talking to your fan. Hello, Eric.
I really appreciate it, Eric.
Really, we are. As ever, it's been a fascinating conversation with you, and my thanks to David Brown for coming on earlier as well and joining in on the more general chit-chat about sketches. That's about it, really, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks. Good luck with the episode.
Thank you, Harris. Earlier, I was talking to David Brown, who's one of the moderators on Nonspot Update's Card Talk message board, and I've just been speaking to Harris Tozer, production manager of Nonspot Update magazine, and you can find more details about Nonspot Update magazine and its various products at nonsportupdate.com. Harris Tozer, who we just heard from, was at the recent New York Comic-Con exhibition. While he was there, he very kindly recorded interviews with a number of the sketch artists also present. Here's the first.
Okay, we're here at New York Comic-Con with artist Jeff Chandler. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing fine. How you doing here at the show?
So far, so good. So far, it's early, so we'll see how it goes.
What are you going to be doing this weekend?
Working.
Are you taking commissions?
I am taking commissions, so that's usually what I end up doing. My head's down the entire time, and we'll see what we get done.
You also selling sketches that are already done?
Yes, I have some pre-drunk sketches. I have a couple commissions that people are coming to pick up, and then, you know, while I'm sitting here at the show in between, I just, you know, do a couple in between, so.
And what are you working on right now, card-wise?
Star Wars Clone Wars is about the only set that I have right now. I just finished up Indiana Jones 4, which is set to release first, second week in May. And that's pretty much it at this point.
No secret products that you can't even tell us about?
I could, but then I had to kill you. No, I really don't. No, that's pretty much it. I've kind of stepped back from a lot of this stuff. It takes up a lot of my time. I have a full-time job, so I'm a little more selective in what I take.
Are you also doing some other comic work, too, as well?
Yes, I am, actually. I have been commissioned by Otis Frampton to do a 11-page book for his Oddly Normal. And hopefully that'll go well, and maybe more stuff will come.
Do you have any idea when that'll come out?
No, I do not. I'm hoping to get pages together for him in time for San Diego Comic-Con.
All right. Thanks a lot.
There'll be another Harris Tozer interview later in this episode. Next up, Patrick Hamill. Well, in this our special sketch podcast, I'm talking to three very talented artists, all covering different aspects of the field. And the first one coming up is Patrick Hamill. Regular listeners to Cardcast will remember I spoke to Patrick briefly in the memorabilia episode in 2007. That was speaking to Patrick as a collector. Today I'm speaking to Patrick as the sketch artist. He's done work for Lord of the Rings masterpieces and any number of Rittenhouse archive sets. Patrick, welcome to Cardcast.
Hello, Paul.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Slightly different circumstances talking to you this time. Last time it was in person and it was in a very noisy apartment and a very, very noisy exhibition hall. Today we're on Skype, obviously, and you're talking to me from your home in Northern Ireland.
That's right.
How did you get started in sketching? Was it just a hobby? You know, you did stuff for yourself and then someone spotted it, or did you actively go out looking to sketch for people?
It was probably one of those sort of right place at the right time situations. On Card Talk, there's a trading section, which is very popular with the members, and you get some very generous people on there. And I had been trading with Metadoc, Dan, and he had been very generous in sending me extra things that I hadn't even been supposed to be part of the trade. And so as a thank you, I had sent him a little sketch because I knew he collected sketch cards.
Right.
Dan posted it on Card Talk, and the reaction was fairly favorable. And Joanna Kolbus encouraged me to get in contact with Rittenhouse. And from there, I sent some samples into them. And the first set then I was working on was the Art and Images of Cena.
Did you do many sketches for that set?
I ended up doing about 500 in total. A bit of a different experience, really, from the more recent sort of stuff for Tops. The Cena stuff and the Star Trek tend to be repeater sketches because a lot of the people who you're doing sketches of on those sets tend to have their own image rights. So you end up having to get each sketch approved and then you're sort of doing repeats of those, as opposed to the way Tops seem to operate is that they approve the artist, and then as long as it's within the theme, there's not terribly much that you can't do. They just say no parodies, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
As long as it's within the world of the property, you can basically have a sort of free rein to do whatever you like.
Do you get feedback from companies or from fans over how well your cards are being received?
You don't tend to get that much feedback from the companies. I suppose to a certain extent they're sort of tied to their deadlines and thinking of the bottom line. I think as long as you do the number of sketches that you've agreed to do and get them in on time, then they're happy with you, as opposed to, you know, sort of particularly looking at the images or saying, you know, that those ones are particularly better than those. You know, you don't get any feedback like that from them. The feedback from fans has been very good. I've been sort of very encouraged by that. It's one of the main reasons why I would continue doing sketches, is because I enjoy it, because of the feedback that you're getting from people and sort of seeing your work out there.
Fans can be quite vocal in their feedback. I know on Card Talk there's been a number of discussions of late, and it's not just on Card Talk. It's been on a number of the other bulletin boards and message boards, including some devoted sketches. They make it plain when they like something or they dislike something, don't they?
Yeah, they can be quite vocal, as you say, you know, about their opinions of mostly good, but occasionally they do sort of object when there's a lot of the very simple sketches maybe go into a product. It's a sort of a difficult area, because I think a lot of the artists have sort of raised the bar and are doing very detailed work, so you're getting some of the sketch artists maybe only doing 50 sketches or 100 sketches, and really doing sort of painted pieces and real sort of finished pieces of art rather than just, you know, the term sketch card.
Yeah.
And sometimes people can get disappointed if they just get a sketch as opposed to a painting. So it can be, that sort of aspect of it can be a little bit discouraging at times, but luckily there's never been sort of anything aimed particularly.
Your stuff, when it does go onto eBay, tends to go for silly money when it does pop up. And thoroughly well-deserved prices, although I don't see a penny of that, do you? What do you think about the whole eBay situation? Because obviously you're quite a highly sought-after artist. How do you feel when you see something that you put together maybe in an afternoon or a couple of afternoons and sent off to the company going for three-figure sums on eBay?
Yeah, it was quite strange the first, you know, couple of times I saw that kind of those, you know, the what people will sometimes pay for sketches. You know, it's... I suppose there are very avid fans of sketches that some of them will chase after and pay a lot of money for maybe a particular character that they collect or particular artist. What surprised me as well was you get people who collect, as I say, particular characters, so they will go all out to get as many of a particular, you know, sort of Arwen or Han Solo or Indiana Jones or whatever. They'll go for a particular character from one of those sets, and they'll try and collect as many images of that person or that thing as they can possibly get their hands on, and will pay sort of big money for them. So, let's say it was a bit strange the first time to see something, as you said, that has been sitting on my table at home, suddenly up on eBay, you know, and someone on the other side of the world paying a lot of money for it. It was sort of a surreal experience the first couple of times. Yeah.
Well, it's strange for me because obviously having met you now a number of times, and we've had many a long night drinking and at shows and slagging each other off and telling jokes at each other's expense, it's strange to suddenly see a listing on eBay saying a extremely rare sketch by the amazingly talented Patrick Hamill. Hang on, I saw that guy drunk not 2 weeks ago. Or that guy saw me drunk not 2 weeks ago.
What happened to what happens in the pub, Stephen?
Well, we're not talking about what actually happened in the pub. I should explain to listeners who didn't hear the memorabilia show that Patrick and I met up while we were up in Birmingham and had many a happy evening drinking and gossiping about cars. I suppose the way most artists can top up their income is by doing commission sketches over the internet or by mail, or they do shows and they sketch at shows. You do a certain amount of commission, don't you?
Yeah, I've done a few commissions. Not as many maybe as some of the other artists who are sort of working at this full time. I'm in the position of being like quite a few of the artists where this is kind of a second job. So you're working a 9-to-5, and then you're coming home and doing this into the small hours of the morning. So you know, sort of your time becomes a bit precious, and I haven't taken that sort of many commissions on or over the years, yeah.
Do you have any particular subjects that you like to sketch?
I do like doing sort of the portrait sketches and things, you know. It's nice to do someone with a sort of a bit of character in their face, you know. Someone like Gimli or Gandalf or a character that's got sort of wrinkles and character about them, you know. I do like working on those and sort of particularly sort of close-ups with eyes and something you can put a bit of sort of character and.
Do you have a particular sketch that you've done that you think, yep, I like that one. That was a really good one to draw.
Yeah, I think I certainly tend to focus on the last thing you've been working on, and when you're looking back at the older stuff, you think, oh, that wasn't quite as good as I remember it. so probably I'm happiest with the latest Lord of the Rings. Masterpieces to some of the stuff I did for that. There were a few pieces where, you know, you're working on it and you think, no, stop now, that's finished, you know, that's done.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you know when a sketch is done? Because a sketch is, by definition, it's sort of, I know you do a lot of very detailed work and some of the other artists do, but I mean, a sketch is technically just a sketch. You just toss off a few lines and away you go. How do you know when it's finished? How do you know when that's enough, that's done?
Yeah, I mean, so, as I say, sometimes they just sort of finish themselves in a sense. You know, they get to the stage where you're looking at them and you're thinking, yeah, if I do any more to this, I'm going to end up covering over the work that I've already done on it, you know. And then there's other times when it gets the better of you and you end up overworking something, and you look back at it and you think, well, probably did too much on that one, you know, it's a bit overworked. And in fact there was someone emailed me about a pull that they got out of the first Lord of the Rings. They pulled I can't remember what the first sketch was. I think it was quite a nice one as well. It might have been a Sean Penn's, and they thought, this is a bit thick, and they peeled it, and there was one of my sketches stuck to the back of it. Because I'd put the paint on that thick that I think it's sort of slightly tacky when they were putting them into the pack, so it had stuck to the sketch in front of it.
Oh, right, a lucky pull for them.
Yeah, it was quite a nice one too. It was Gandalf with the Balrog.
That one was obviously painted. Did you have a favourite medium that you used to do sketches? I mean, you've done pencil, you've done painted. Which do you prefer?
Depends on the image, really. You know, there are some, enjoy doing sort of faces and portraits, that kind of thing, and there's some of the sort of pick someone with a beard or a sort of wrinkle, lots of wrinkles or lots of shadow on their face. It's sometimes fun just to keep those as pencil sketches.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of work in two or three tones just. And then there are sort of the landscape things and that kind of thing where it's much better to use color.
Yeah.
Favorite medium? Well, I was learning as I went along, really, with what works on some of the cards. And you find sometimes that luckily, with the Rittenhouse sets, they usually send you a few extras rather than just your full number quota of cards. So there were a few that I made a mess of where I'm using, like, they don't take very well to watercolor. They tend to, you know, sort of buckle a bit. So you do have to be careful what sort of medium you're using on them, that the card isn't going to end up being destroyed.
Yeah.
With the masterpiece, the Lord of the Rings masterpiece set, I discovered Copic markers, which is what a lot of the other artists use. It's a nice quick way of getting some color, blocks of color done on the card. And I was a bit surprised at first, if you turn the cards over, some of them you'll see color has come through onto the other side. And I wasn't sure just how fans would react to that, but I've never actually had a bad reaction to that. You know, effectively, some of them can ruin the other side of the card, but sometimes what you hear is actually favorable, that a lot of people open their packs from the back, and they say when they get to the sketch card and they see color coming through, they get excited because they know they're going to be getting, you know, something that's colorful and, you know, worth having.
Yeah. We've been to shows and looked at sketches, and you actually pointed me in the direction of a couple of really nice bargains. Robert Terenashi, who does...
Yes.
He tends to highlight, doesn't he? He uses some additional colors just to highlight slight areas.
Most of his stuff is just with black ink. He does occasionally use sort of a bit of white here and there, but he tends to stay to sort of the tonal work rather than... I haven't seen much color work from him, but yeah, he's one of those very good examples of sort of the strangeness of sketches and sketch collectors, because he was one of my sort of favorite artists from the first masterpiece set, and I really loved his work. It was very fresh and very instant. You know, you could see he was in the zone, you know, when he was working on those. You know, he was just making the right lines and sort of almost, well, it sounds a bit daft, sort of zen, you know, zen sketching. You know,
yes.
He was putting a line down that was just right. You know, it's very difficult to get sketches like that and keep them looking really fresh, you know, as opposed to sort of overworked. And I know a lot of the collectors and certainly a lot of the dealers, you know, if they got another Terenashi, they were sighing because he was one of the ones that did more sketches than the others. I think he did about 1,000 or something like that. So it seems to be, as well as the quality of the art, it can depend on how many sketches someone has done, which I think to someone outside the sketch world would probably seem a bit strange, you know, that you're judging by volume as well as by the quality of the sketch itself.
Speaking as a collector rather than as an artist, what sort of stuff do you like to get or to see?
Well, from the new Lord of the Rings set and from the Heroes set, I'd really love to get my hands on some stuff by Mark McHaley. His work is just astounding. It's beautiful. The amount of detail and the fineness of it. It looks as if he's probably using an airbrush in a lot of the sketches.
Ah. You know,
and a lot of his, even his pencil drawing, he's got a very sort of distinctive technique. You can spot his sketches straight away. Once you've seen one, you know what you're looking for, you know, and you can spot them a mile off. They're very distinctive, or very fresh, lovely style. Mm-hmm. And another artist from the Lord of the Rings sets, Len Billinger, he did some really lovely painted work for both sets. there was an image that really sort of struck me that he did in the first set, where it was Gimli in the snow, and Gimli's beard is covered in snow. Mm-hmm. It's a really lovely sketch. And then he did one as well of Helm's Deep, where it was all done tones of blue.
Right.
It was very, very nice. So, but I can't see me being able to afford either of those two. I'm afraid. Yeah. They're a bit on the steep side. When you see them coming up on eBay, you know, you're talking, as you say, three figures. Yeah.
There seems to be a sudden surge in sketches. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this develops over the next couple of years. And I'm just sort of kind of waiting for the bubble to burst to a certain extent. You know, I'm just wondering whether the fans will get fed up seeing the same artists, or whether they're going to want to see fresh blood all the time, or whether, you know, whether it'll keep its popularity, or whether it's just a fad. It's difficult to say. You know, from my perspective, whether the fans will grow tired of it, or whether it's going to be there to stay, like the autographs and the costume. I'm interested in cards and gems.
What sort of stuff particularly rings your bell as far as cards you collect? I know we've both opened packs in the past. We picked up boxes cheap and
Yeah,
opening them. Yeah, so I know in particular you collect the Metal Gear Solid, don't you?
Oh yeah, that's a set that really sort of got me interested back into cards a couple of years ago, was the Metal Gear Solid. They are if anybody hasn't seen them, they're all acetate. They're all sort of a clear plastic with various layers of images built over the top of the plastic, and they're all individually numbered.
Yeah.
And each pack, there was only something like four cards and a checklist card in each pack, and there was only one base card, and then the three sort of levels of lots of different levels of parallel cards. So even trying to put together a base set is a bit of a challenge. I mean, I've had maybe three, four boxes and still haven't got a full base set. Yeah, I mean, there's rumored that there's sketch cards in there, that the artist who did the designs for the game and who did the designs that appear on the cards, apparently rumor is that he did 10 sketches.
Right.
And those are in the pack somewhere, but I've never seen one come up yet.
Rather than hen's teeth, basically. So this whole thing started with a sketch you did for another Car Talk member. What was the sketch that started the whole thing off, Patrick?
Well, ironically, it was actually a Gollum sketch. So in a sense, it's now come sort of full circle. So I sent that Gollum off, and that got me started for Rittenhouse, and now I'm back drawing Gollum again for Tops.
Oh, that's brilliant. So it really has come around in a full circle.
Yeah.
Are you working on anything at the moment? Have you got anything in the pipeline?
Not specifically, but I got word back from Tops there recently that I've been approved as an artist by Lucas Arts. So
does that mean a certain character with a bullwhip and a hat?
Not necessarily, because I also do Star Wars and a few other things.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it means that I'm generally approved to do sort of products that come out of that particular studio, but I haven't anything particular lined up yet. But
no.
What I'm hoping is that they'll maybe do another Star Wars Galaxy set. I would really love to see another Star Wars Galaxy set, you know, an all sketch, you know, sort of drawing set with lots of nice paintings and things on cards. And that was one of the sets that got me back into cards as well, was the original Star Wars Galaxy cards. One of my next goals is really, I would love to get one of my pieces put on a base card. It might sound a bit strange to people, you know, but I would really love to see some of my work, you know, sort of on a base card. I think I might feel that I've arrived if I saw that.
You are a regular on Card Talk. Anybody listening may not know, but Patrick posts as Pat Data. How do you feel when someone posts and say, I've pulled a Patrick Hamill? How do you feel when you see your name like that?
Well, the first couple of times it was quite sort of surreal, you know. As you say, you know me fairly well now, and there was an incident there a couple of weeks ago where someone emailed me and said, "Are you really Patrick Hamill?" "The Patrick Hamill." And it was a bit strange, you know, because, you know, it's a bit of a surreal situation, you know, when someone sees you as a sketch artist as opposed to just a normal bod, you know, sort of working a 9-to-5.
Well, you have got a website, and I will be putting a link onto that, but it's not particularly busy at the moment. That's not your fault. That's because
No, it is my fault. I'm technically inept, you know, at working this thing. So CSID did very kindly, and yourself, you know, sort of arrange a website for me, but I have done nothing with it yet so far. You know, I've tried posting and failed miserably, so I will have to try and put something together.
Well, if nothing else, if only because it'd be nice to get, if people want to get in touch with you to do commissions, because you do them, you said rarely, but you do them if people...
Yeah, I do them occasionally if people are interested, but probably the easiest way to get in touch with me is to PM me on the Scoundrel Art community or say hi through Card Talk, you know.
Yeah.
That's probably the easiest way for someone, and then they can... sort of discuss what they're looking for and what they're after, and we can see if we can work something out between jobs.
Or if necessary, if listeners are interested in that sort of thing, maybe if they want to drop a line to me, I'll forward the mail on to Patrick. I won't pass Patrick's email address out. That'll be down to you and Patrick. But if anybody's interested, drop me a line and I'll forward it over to you, if that's okay.
That's great, Paul. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'll remind everybody of the email address at the end of the show. Finally, you collect cards, you buy packs, you can tell what question's coming up here. Have you ever pulled one of your own cards?
No.
Have you ever come close to it?
No, that would be funny. That would be very strange. I have bought quite a lot of the last two Lord of the Rings sets. We didn't see much of the Xena over here, and... I think, yeah, I did buy some of that particular, the Star Trek set as well, but
yeah.
I don't think I even managed to pull any of the sketches from the Star Trek one, because they were every other box or something like that, opposed to one in every box at that stage. I've pulled some quite nice sketches. Tops, when they're sending you... back your six pack, the cards that you get back to sell yourself, very kindly send a complimentary box. So I opened that recently and actually managed to pull three sketches instead of two, which was nice.
That's very nice. And you still get a little buzz of excitement when you pull a sketch, regardless, really.
Oh yes, most definitely. If I managed to pull a Mark McKayley or a Bellinger, I'd be dancing around.
Yeah.
Just like any other collector.
But if you pulled a Patrick Hamill, it'll be, oh, it's him again.
Oh, God.
I have to say, I'm in exactly the same boat, because I have yet to pull a Patrick Hamill sketch card out of any packet I've bought, though that's not to say I don't have a couple of Patrick Hamill sketches. Patrick's been very kind in doing a couple of sketches for me in the past, and they take pride of position in my collection. I don't collect many sketches, but those ones are in there, and they really are excellent work. And if you're interested in seeing one of Patrick Hamill's sketches for me, you might want to have a look at my other podcast, which is a quick plug here, Radio Tilly, which is nothing to do with cards, but Patrick did a very nice sketch of the author E.F. Benson, about whom that podcast is based. So I've basically ripped off the sketch and used it as the logo for that. But if you're interested in looking at that one, you can go and visit that one at radiotilling.blogspot.com. Patrick, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me on this our sketch special. It's been marvellous fun talking to you. It's always been a pleasure meeting up with you at shows. You are rightly, in my opinion, regarded as one of the more collectible sketch artists, and long may that continue.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, hopefully see you and any of the other card talkers at the November memorabilia again.
Sure. Hopefully that'll be happening, because that's under new ownership. I'm looking into finding some more information about that one for a future episode. Patrick, thanks again.
Okay, Paul. All the best. Thank you.
That was Patrick Hamill, who's better known on Card Talk as Pat Data, but he's a well-established sketch artist who's done sketches for Star Trek, Xena, and most recently Lord of the Rings masterpieces. That was Patrick Hamill. And now we move on to the second of the interviews Harris Tozer conducted at the New York Comic Con.
Okay, we're here at the New York Comic Con with Brian Kong. How you doing today, Brian?
Good. How's it going?
All right. How's the show been going for you?
Pretty good so far. Right now, it's just at the stage of where it's professionals, but it's been pretty busy, so it should be a pretty crazy weekend. You know, a lot of people expected.
Great. What are your plans for this weekend?
Just basically promote my work and hope that there's a good response to it.
Are you taking commissions this weekend?
Yeah, I always take commissions at shows.
So you'll be doing sketch cards?
Sketch cards and whatever else people want, you know, bigger covers, bigger sizes and stuff like that.
Well, what kind of stuff do you got coming up?
Working on a few card sets, Clone Wars and Heroes, and I'm working on an independent book also, so, you know, just keeping busy.
And who is your favorite sketch card artist?
Warren Martinek, I'll bet you.
That's a tough one. Can I not comment on that one?
No comment?
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Well, that's the end of part one of the episode. Part two will follow shortly if you downloaded it. In the second half, we've got two more lengthy interviews with artists, another couple of shorter interviews conducted by Harris Tozer at the New York Comic Con, and the usual closing credits. So, please do join me for part two.